Not Old Better Show. I'm your host, Paul Vogelzang. Our guest today, Dr. Clifford V. Johnson, is a professor in the Physics and Astronomy Department at the University of Southern California. Now, hearing the word physics should definitely not scare you away, especially our Not Old Better audience. Actually, quite the contrary. You'll want to hear this because Dr. Johnson is well known for explaining physics to the general public through public lectures, writing, drawing, blogging, filmmaking appearances at museums, bookstores, festivals, and especially through television and online. He works with artists, writers, filmmakers, and others to help improve science content and the perception and understanding of science in the arts, media, and the broader culture.
Not just the content of the science, but also who's doing the science itself. You know, can I help them paint a portrait of what a scientist is really like?
That, of course, was our guest today, Dr. Clifford Johnson. Dr. Johnson was the science script advisor for the National Geographic anthology series Genius. Genius is currently airing episodes on the National Geographic Channel, as well as trusted online sites. Genius, from executive producers Brian Grazer and Ron Howard, is the story of Albert Einstein. Genius follows the brilliant scientist through the ups and downs of his life, from failing to get his doctorate to developing the general theory of relativity. Dr. Clifford Johnson guided, advised, and even cajoled a bit to get the science right on the program. As all Not Old Better audience love our science programs, you'll love this interview. Please join me in welcoming to the Not Old Better Show via Skype, Dr. Clifford Johnson. Well, Dr. Clifford Johnson, what a pleasure it is to be talking to you. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
I think you have this really interesting role as scientist to the entertainment industry in terms of your work as science advisor on films and to artists. Tell us a little bit about your expertise and what you shared on the new National Geographic series, Genius.
Well, there are lots of things I do as a science advisor that may be a little different from what people expect. And I also think that a number of other people who sometimes are in this role maybe go in a little differently. I sort of have my own take on it. And that is not necessarily just to be fact-checking, which is, I think, what people often think science advising is about, but to really give advice on the whole package, whether it be not just the content of the science, but also who's doing the science itself. You know, can I help them paint a portrait of what a scientist is really like? Can I help just make the whole environment believable? And I do this in nonfiction and fiction alike. So with Einstein, it's of course a real scientist and real science and real historical facts. But you know, sometimes I advise on you know, crazy things to do with, you know, all sorts of adventure stories with superpowers and things, but the criteria are the same. How does one help make a believable scientist characters and environments in which they work and things like that? So that's what I was helping with. The Einstein people were particularly keen to try and tell the Einstein story in a way that doesn't compartmentalize the life and then the science part, but recognizing that scientists' lives are full of science, and how they look at the world, how they approach the world is from through a scientific lens often. And so I was able to help them sprinkle, and in some cases quite a lot of sprinkling, of real nuanced science in the middle of the telling of the life as well. And I think it's looking quite good on screen. People seem to be liking it.
People do seem to be liking it. I think what's interesting about it, too, is you really painted this portrait very well of scientists as collaborators. And I've read a little bit about you and your work as kind of science communicator. As a professor at the University of Southern California, how do you collaborate and network and communicate about science with other scientists and then to the rest of us, those of us non-science types?
Well, you know, essential to all of it is really conversation. It's back and forth. You know, one of the things in the show that I was keen to help them do, and to their credit, they were already trying to do that, and so I helped them along, and that is to make sure that they don't fall into the usual cliche about the Einstein mythology, which is that he was this lone genius working, you know, outside his field in the patent office, and he revolutionized the field, which is really not true. You know, he was in contact with the scientific community in the ways that we communicate with each other, which is partly through the literature, but also through conversation. So he was, of course, a well-trained scientist. He had contacts from you know, his former student, fellow students, and former professors, and things like that. That means he's still in contact with the community. He's bouncing ideas off the people around him. It also happens, of course, that his first wife was a scientist as well. Of course, he's going to be bouncing ideas. They learned lots of things together. They were passionate about the subject together. So he's bouncing ideas off her as well. And that's what all scientists do. It's a very collaborative enterprise. And even if you end up writing a piece of work on your own, as your own work, it is still shaped by the interactions you have with the people around you. Whether it be you're testing out an idea, you've had this brilliant idea, sure, but in order to sort of see where this idea can go, you bounce it off people. You ask people things. You test out the consequences of the idea against existing facts. You may find those existing facts by talking with others and things like that. So this is very much how we collaborate now, and how we do science now. And it was how science was done back then as well. In some ways, in contemporary times, we have more ways of doing that process. So, for example, the other day I was meeting an old friend, a scientist who I've known since 1994. And I knew him in 1994 because he emailed me about a paper that I'd written with a suggestion at the end of the paper. And he emailed me about the paper and said, hey, let's explore that suggestion. I'd never met him. We ended up doing a collaboration, writing a paper, getting it published before we ever met, because we did it all over email. This is back in 1994. So that's an example of how that same mode of doing science, where you collaborate, you bounce ideas off each other, goes, and it's even more now with social media and all of those kinds of things.
One of the phrases that I heard you you used to describe, I thought it was very apt in this case, is standing on the shoulders of giants. The furtherance requires you to look back.
That I think the first time that was used in a scientific context, I think Isaac Newton said that. So again, he's one of the undisputed titans of science, and he also acknowledged that I think the full phrase is that I see further because I stand on the shoulders of giants. Mm-hmm. And the context in which he said that, I think there was an effort to be generous, to acknowledge that you learn through others. There's also a claim that he was also being facetious because he had lots of exchanges with another famous scientist called Robert Hooke, who made a number of suggestions. And Hooke was apparently short of stature, and I think it was also interpreted as Newton being a little playful at the expense of Hooke as well. So there was a little joke there, but the core of the idea is true. We're not alone in the enterprise. We have to learn from others, and sometimes it's just the act of explaining something to someone else, even if they're not working on it. Sometimes that helps you organize your thoughts, and then you make a breakthrough. So that's relevant for me sometimes because I spend a lot of time trying to figure out what's the best way to explain this concept to somebody who isn't a trained scientist, because I'm either going to go on TV and do it on a documentary, or maybe I'm writing about it in a magazine article or in a book. And the art, again, so that's part of the dialogue, the conversation as well, which is to just trying to figure out how to communicate an idea sometimes helps you sharpen the idea to the point where maybe you make a breakthrough.
I wonder, prior to your work on this series, Genius, what were your opinions of Einstein?
My opinions are certainly that, and were before, because it so happens that I'm a fan of that period of scientific history. So I know a lot of the Einstein story and the ins and outs of the kinds of scientific work he did, and a little bit of the personal stuff. Well, a fair amount of the personal stuff. I probably learned a lot more about it in this context as I dug into it. But certainly, Einstein is a great example of someone that you can use to help get more nuance into the whole term genius. That's this whole show is called Genius, and I sometimes think that's a misused term because it seems to be all about some body with magical ability who can just do stuff. And of course, it's much more complicated than that. It's a great deal. Probably the vast majority of it is hard work and being enthusiastic about an area. And he's a great example of someone who just had intense curiosity, and he learned over the years how to ask the right questions about things. That was something. It's a learned skill, and of course he was interested in doing it because it's what he was enthusiastic about. So there's his motivation, and he got better at it, and then he started honing his ability to ask the right questions. Sometimes to ask the questions that no one else was asking. That's a phrase that's actually used in the show, or to ask the question in just the right way. And to essentially, he invented his own apparatus for addressing certain questions. This whole business of doing a thought experiment, which he's very famous for. There were versions of that kind of thinking before, where you challenge an idea by essentially building the whole scenario in an imaginary setting and just testing out the ideas, almost testing them to destruction to see what it leads to. He really perfected that in the business of trying to understand the things that became revolutionary, quantum physics, but even more so relativity. And so he was someone who, over the years, developed the right sort of skills in order to become the person that we know him for, and I think that deserves a lot of respect. And of course, we have that in our field. We really, the style by which Einstein did things is one of the models that a lot of us use in contemporary times for doing our science.
One of the things that, and as I say, we've watched the series here, and one of the things that I think we've really enjoyed and come to know about Einstein is this gift of asking questions. At one point in the show, he turns to one of the students and asks, "Do you have any other questions?" And the student says he has one, and Einstein responds, "I have hundreds." And I just, it's some humor, it's that joviality and spirit and humility all kind of wrapped up into one.
Exactly, and it's hugely important. When I teach, I try and encourage students to not be afraid to ask questions, to not feel that you come to a point where you know everything and then you're a professor. That's just not how it works. It's about knowing that there are lots of questions. There will always be lots of questions. And also, and perhaps paradoxically, there's also lots of ideas, and there'll always be lots of ideas. And what distinguishes one idea from another and a successful idea from just an idea is how much you then try and shape that idea. You push it forward. You work on it. You develop it. And so, it's very important to encourage students, whether they be students of science or students of life, to just continue having questions and continue coming up with ideas that you can then select from in order to go, okay, I'm gonna go with this one and I'm gonna see where it goes. And that's hugely important. The moment you stop having ideas about things and you stop asking questions, it gets very dull. Why bother?
Some of these, that, yeah. I'm sorry for interrupting. I was going to ask you, you know, some of these ideas are very complex, and as a certainly as a non-physicist and really a non-scientist, I've been surprised at the commitment to the real science and to these complex ideas that the series has shown. My audience has a hunger for these science stories. Were you surprised at that same level of commitment? And are you must be pleased by that level of kind of interest and dedication to this this complex area.
I was pleased by it. I was impressed that they were open to it. I confess to, you know, helping push a little bit on, you know, to make sure they were open to it. Mm-hmm. And I was surprised by how much actually made it to screen, because I think there are adventurous writers and showrunners out there trying to make shows. I think trying to raise the bar in terms of what can be put on screen. And there's always a problem that this is almost always scuppered by the gatekeepers, the people who greenlight shows and go, oh, no. And it's usually something like this. I read this thing, I don't understand it, and therefore the audience won't. Mm-hmm. And then you're done. Mm-hmm. And so you see this a lot. You see this in lots of things where stuff is incredibly dumbed down, or there's just everything's diluted out. All the good ideas all get drained out in some way or the other, because as it goes through the chain of command, it gets more and more diluted. In this case, a huge amount of credit goes to the originator of the series, a guy called Noah Pink, who's he's also one of the writers and the executive producers. He wrote episode 4, he wrote the pilot, and I think there's a few more episodes of his coming up, a couple more episodes of his coming up. He's a really great writer, but he had the vision to say, look, we can tell the Einstein story at a higher level than just, you know, the usual Einstein stuff. And he was very open then to the kinds of suggestions I was making about some of the science that could go in. He had a lot of the sort of the big beats, right? He wanted to do the Einstein year, the famous miracle year, the 1905, the five papers that were written. He definitely wanted to have that. Then it was a matter of me helping them in some of their choices for other episodes in terms of the content. Again, they did a lot of the groundwork themselves. I was then able to explain more science to them that they could use. And there were many situations where I went, look, what you're doing here could be well supported by this piece of science that you could throw in here. Let me help you do that. Or there were cases where they needed a lot of extended dialogue between two people talking about science. And, of course, they wouldn't know how to write that in a legitimate way. So I helped out with that. I would give suggestions. They would then put their writerly touch on it, or in a few cases they just left it alone, and things like that. So the end result is that you end up with something that, if you sit there on screen and you stop, if you sit there in front of the screen and you stop and you go, "What? How much science is there?" It's a huge amount for a primetime TV show, but it somehow doesn't come across as a spinachy physics lecture, because the writers have done a great job of mixing it in with the personal story. The physics there seems, it really enhances it. It's not there as decoration. It enhances it, and the physics benefits from the personal story as well as the other way around. And that's a triumph. And I feel that something could be done more and could have been done a long time ago, but I just don't think people were open to it. So this show is kind of a breakthrough in that way, I would say.
As I've said, it is very entertaining. It's excellent. We're at about the halfway point now in the series, and I'm curious what you think we'll see as a benefit to the science community following this great program, Genius.
Benefits to the science community? I think that's a really great question. One of the reasons I do this whole business of science advising when I get the opportunity is because I do think we're in a society whereby science is sort of regarded as a thing that's separate from the rest of our culture. In fact, I think most people wouldn't even use the word culture in the context of science, and I think that's a mistake. So science is sort of this special thing done by a special group of people who have special talents, and, you know, a lot of people just go, that's not for me. And that's unfortunate. It's unfortunate not just because I want everyone to become a scientist, because I don't. That would be a dull world. Mm-hmm. But because I think in order to not be afraid of science, in order to recognize how science affects all of our lives and becomes intensely important in political decisions and all of those sorts of things, it helps to know that scientists are real people just like you and me, with flaws and, you know, moments of genius and all of those things that go up to make a real human being. And we don't have enough portraits of a full scientist, of a, you know, the fully fledged life of a scientist, to reach for in television and film. And I think being able to have a 10-hour show, you know, using this long-form TV format, mm-hmm. to really tell a nuanced life with the science and the life all up there on screen, with all of its flaws and all of its glories, I think gives people a real appreciation of what scientists are, and maybe a real appreciation for what science is. It isn't just, you know, coming up with a bunch of tools to cure cancer and what have you. There's the whole business is just the quest to know just because you want to know. The quest to figure things out for their own sake, which often, and in the case of Einstein, has tremendous applications. But it came just from curiosity, from asking questions. And I think a lot of people just don't relate to that, or they just don't understand that that's what scientists are really doing. And so it's great. I think it's a huge benefit for the scientific community if more people get an appreciation of what really drives scientists, and also that scientists are, you know, regular people who make terrible personal mistakes.
Well, Dr. Clifford Johnson, what a pleasure it's been to talk to you. I know you're very busy. I just have one final question that really is just kind of a follow-up to the last, and that is, what can the next generation of geniuses then learn from the program Genius?
Well, first of all, I would say, first and foremost, I hope that by unpacking the term genius itself and showing that it isn't what I was talking about earlier, that it isn't just, you know, you have these magical abilities, which are in some ways inaccessible. People believe that you either have it or you haven't. You know, that might get more people realizing that they can contribute. They can do extraordinary contributions. Whether it be in science or whatever field they choose, mm-hmm. Genius is not just it's not at all about magical ability. It's about the combination of, you know, drive, enthusiasm, hard work, more hard work, even more hard work. All of these things. Everyone has access to those things, and so genius becomes less inaccessible. If you watch this show, in my opinion, I think that's one of the central lessons. So what that means is, I think, hopefully, a career in whatever extraordinary area you want to get into could be something that more people recognize that they can pursue. They don't have to sit around waiting for the magical talents. They just need to get up and start applying some of those things that drove Einstein. And so that for me is the really great lesson I hope people take away.
Well, Dr. Clifford Johnson, again, a pleasure to talk to you. Of course, the science advisor on the National Geographic series Genius, the man behind the mind, Einstein. And we appreciate your time, and we're looking forward to watching the rest of the episodes. And hopefully we'll catch up again with you and talk a little bit more science, because I do think my audience is fascinated by this subject, and you just have a brilliant way of communicating it, and your commitment valuable and very much appreciated. Thank you, Dr. Clifford Johnson, for your time today.
It was a real pleasure, and I'd love to talk again.
We'd love it too. Thanks, Dr. Johnson.
Bye.
Bye-bye. I want to thank Dr. Clifford Johnson for his time today. I also want to extend my thanks to the National Geographic Television Channel, as well as to Warren Betts Communications. You can watch brand new episodes of the drama Genius and Albert Einstein Sundays at 9 p.m. on the National Geographic Channel.